Hello there, everyone, and welcome back to the Showing Up to Your Life podcast and YouTube channel. My name is Art Burns, and I am very excited to be here with you on what is my kind of Monday morning, but your kind of Wednesday morning. You know, we all have different schedules, different worlds, different lives. But here it is for me, the beginning of my week. Coming off of a couple of really nice, relaxing days off, as relaxing as days off get in the summertime with two kids and neighbors of eight kids and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a relative term, right? But I am feeling very excited to be here with you all today, and I hope that you're all doing well too. Wherever you are, I hope it's not too hot. It is like we are having, I think, our 400 degree day here in Denver. So it's no joke. You know, we have all seen these summers getting warmer and warmer. Even places like I have friends in San Diego who are talking about, like, gosh, we never used to see 95 degrees for 2 weeks the way we see it now. It's just the way the world is. And this is something that allows us, or this offers us an opportunity to practice some acceptance, right? You know, that when we start to get, you know, bogged down in the expectations of how things are supposed to be, right? Like, you know, it's not supposed to be this hot this time of year where I live. And so the minute that we, you know, kind of allow ourselves to dwell in that expectation, what happens is then we judge what we're going through against that expectation. And in that judgment, that's where we start to suffer. All right. I know this is a very basic concept that I've talked about a lot here, and I just thought it was a good opportunity here to just sort of throw that out to you again. It's not what we're going to talk about today. We have a much different topic today. But understand, though, it's a crucial understanding that it is not the heat outside that's going to make you suffer. Right now, the heat is going to make you uncomfortable potentially. Right now, you know, you have methods and equipment both internally and externally to mitigate that heat and that discomfort that might come with the heat. Right, but the discomfort itself is not the true suffering. Right. You could call it suffering, of course, right? It might make you suffer to be so hot, right? But the key is, though, that if we're going to add on an emotional level of suffering, right, which is to shake our fists and say, why is it so hot here? It's not supposed to be this hot. It's not fair. This is not what I signed up for. This is not my expectation, right? That is going to cause more suffering. That's going to last after the sun goes down and things start cooling off, right? That's the idea, right? Life is always going to throw things at us that are going to cause pain from time to time. That is inevitable, right? Life is going to have moments of extreme joy, extreme pleasure, and it is also going to have moments of extreme difficulty and extreme, and sometimes extreme pain. Sometimes not extreme. Sometimes the pain is just a little bit of pain, right? But whatever the case is, though, that is what life is, right? Life is not here to accommodate us, to make us, you know, always comfortable. And in fact, that's not good for us either. Right, that's not good for your telomeres and your at the ends of your chromosomes. It's not good for your, you know, as a extension of the telomeres and the telomerase. It's not good for your cellular health. It's not good for your body. It's not good for, you know, so many aspects. Right, to get into that place. Right, and so so that is why, you know, it's really important to be able to take a step back. Right? Take a step back and say, okay, this is what life is. You know, and as I was starting to say, I'm sorry, I got digressed again, but it happens quite often in this podcast, as you all know, it's no surprise, I'm sure. But as I was saying, like, you know, it requires some kind of adversity for us, right? Like life, having some kind of adversity is actually a very positive thing. Again, for our cellular health, right? Like we need some level of resistance, kind of, right? If we just live a life that is no trouble at all, as much as that seems inviting, as much as that seems like, wow, yeah, that doesn't seem like it would suck at all, right? I get it, right? Of course, in our minds, we can say, yeah, it would be great to live without any difficulty, any trouble, any discomfort at all in my life, right? But at the end of the day, at the end of your life, you will actually suffer more as a result of that in two ways, right? Number one, again, some adversity is good for our system, right? Our system is supposed to experience that, right? It exercises our nervous system. It exercises our immune response. It exercises many levels of our emotional response. So it's good for things to go hard sometimes, right? It's not a bad thing, right? But even more than a more sort of practical way in which that impacts us on the long term is that eventually everyone experiences some difficulty. Even a billionaire who has everything they want, right? There's going to be a time where something upsets them, right? And their resilience to that difficulty, that suffering that they're going to feel in their lives, right? Their resilience to that is predicated upon the level of adversity they have experienced in their lives. All right. So at some point you're going to come to a crash if that's the way you're living. That's just the simple way of putting it, right? And the crash is going to be hard, and the crash is going to be really painful. And it might hurt more than the thing that you thought was, you know, not a big deal. You know, like the things that were avoiding suffering, right? The crash is going to hurt even more than that. All right. So today, you know, I want to talk a little bit. It's kind of connected to what I'm saying here, but it's also a little bit of a departure as well. And so I want to talk about, I'm just started this brand new book, not brand new publication wise, but brand new to me, The Emotional Life of Your Brain by Richard Davidson and Sharon Begley. You know, I talk a lot about Richard Davidson in this podcast, and I am one psyched person to read this book. I mean, I am really excited to read this book, and I'm sure over the next couple of weeks you're going to hear a lot about emotions and the brain, you know, because I'm going to be reading this amazing book about it. So and truly, I mean, just in the first chapter I already have like two notes marked in the introduction, not even the first chapter, in the introduction. So it's that good, and I'm that excited. So as soon as I get done with this video, I'll probably go back to reading it for an hour or so before my next meeting. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. So anyway, one of the things I wanted to talk about today, I want to follow up on something that I talked about the other day, two podcasts ago, which would have been Saturday, I believe. It's very hard for me to figure out all these days of the week with my unconventional schedule here, but but yeah, interbeing, right? And I want to actually, this great, and this did not, I was already going to talk about, well, I was going to talk about today's generosity and the importance of generosity, right? And to understand the importance of generosity, it is helpful to understand what interbeing, you know, kind of, you know, to understand a little bit deeper the concept of interbeing, and to understand how interbeing creates a connection to the rest of the world. That's the key takeaway here, okay? So I'm going to read you this little quote that came up is a Facebook memory this morning, okay? because it really does tie into what I want to say today. So this is something I shared from, I think it was 2018, this day in 2018, so 3 years ago. Okay, it's a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, who you hear me reference quite a bit, almost as much as Richard Davidson probably. Thich Nhat Hanh writes, and this probably came from either the book Being Peace or the book The Miracle of Mindfulness. I don't know which one, but I'm sure it came from one of those two. I just did some sleuthing this morning. I'm pretty sure it came from one of those two, and I believe it's the second one. I believe it could have been Being Peace, though. Either one of those. I'm sure it came from either Being Peace or The Miracle of Mindfulness, both by Thich Nhat Hanh. So read both of them and see if you find this quote. Because you'll benefit from reading both of those, promise you. Okay, so my phone's not charging here. Okay, there we go. All right, so it doesn't die in the middle of this. Okay, so Thich Nhat Hanh writes, often when we say, I love you, in quotes, we focus mostly on the idea of the I who is doing the loving and less on the quality of the love that's being offered. This is because we are caught by the idea of self. We think we have a self, but there is no such thing as an individual separate self. Pardon me. A flower is made of only non-flower elements, such as chlorophyll, sunlight, and water. If we were to remove all the non-flower elements from the flower, there would be no flower left. A flower cannot be by herself alone. A flower can only interbe with all of us. Humans are like this too. We can't exist by ourselves alone. We can only interbe. I am made only of non-me elements, such as the earth, the sun, parents, and ancestors. In a relationship, if you can see the nature of interbeing between you and the other person, you can see that his suffering is your own suffering, and your happiness is his own happiness. With this way of seeing, you can speak and act differently. This in itself can relieve so much suffering. So in many ways, what Thich Nhat Hanh is telling us here, right, is that it is the very concept of this idea of a separate self that is causing or at least contributing to the suffering that we feel, right? And again, this is a good time to reflect back on what I said a minute ago, right? The difference between pain and suffering. Right, that the idea of you know the suffering, right, that extra pain, if you will, right, is very much in many ways arising from this concept that we all share. Share is an awkward and ironic word to use in that moment. It's a concept that we all buy into, that we are existing as separate selves. Right. And now this is not just a woo-woo concept, right? Richard Davidson talks about this all the time. He's already mentioned it in this book, right? Dr. Dan Siegel talks about this all the time. I am just starting just yesterday, I started a 6-month program with Dr. Siegel that is called, it's part of the Interpersonal Neurobiology course, right? It's a course in interpersonal neurobiology. Dan Siegel, yes, he has some spiritual sort of concepts. He definitely has done some, you know, work in meditation and everything like that, you know, so he's not completely non-spiritual, but he's a scientist through and through. Right? He is not a monk. Okay, this is not a spiritual concept here. This is a concept that is rooted in neuroscience. And I've talked about this quite a bit before, and I mentioned this just the other day, that when we I just lost my train of thought drinking that cup of water. One of the things that I've talked about, and I mentioned this the other day, is that, you know, even on a physiological level, right, we are absolutely connected to each other, right? And this is measurable with scientific instruments and research techniques, right? That it is provable, it is measurable that there exists between us a resonance, an empathic resonance that happens on the sort of middle road of our brain, or the low road of our brain, if you will, right? There's the top part of our brain is like where all of our thinking goes, right? And there's that limbic area underneath that, which is essentially the what they call the emotional seat of the brain. However, that's already been challenged here, so we'll get to that later. But anyway, that part of our emotional brain, and that's the ancient part of our brain, right? It developed a long, 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 long time ago. And we share that part of our brain with every mammal on earth, okay? And so there is a connection that's happening, right? Between the amygdala and my amygdala and your amygdala, my hippocampus and your hippocampus, my insula and your insula. These are all parts of this limbic system, right? They're talking to each other, right? They're picking up things that are beyond our perception consciously, right? For that matter, even the nervous system itself is communicating, is picking up things from you. Like, well, I'm sitting here with you. My nervous system is picking up things about you that I don't consciously realize. But it's telling me, is this person safe or is this person a threat? Right? Without any kind of thought process, this is all happening, right? And of course, then you have the mirror neurons, right, which were discovered back in 1992, which show that when you do something pleasurable, if I watch you do something that brings you joy and pleasure, I am going to feel joy and pleasure in my body. Not just think about how nice it is that you're feeling joy and pleasure. No, I actually feel your joy and pleasure in my body through the activation of these mirror neurons. Okay, so I hope that I've proven to you now how real and how valid and how important this connection is to each other. So now we come to a little bit of a dilemma, right? Because, I'm sure most of you sitting there, if not all of you sitting there, and anybody who doesn't yet, get in touch with me, because I'm sure that even if required another 10, 15 minutes of talking, I can convince you to understand at least that there is this connection, right? And that's great, right? But depending on how old you are, you have spent the last 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years telling yourself that you are a separate self. You've been, and I just use the word self, like that word should like really be stricken from the English language in a big way, right? I mean, of course, not really. I mean, we do have a sense of self and the sense of identity, the egoic identity in the proper measure, in the proper proportion, that is a very healthy thing, right? And you can't just get rid of that, right? Of course, you can't, right? However, most of us have grown up, myself included, right, have grown up thinking that that's what it all is, right? It's all about I am separate from everything else in the world, and therefore I have to do for myself and let the devil take the hindmost, as the old timers would say, right? And so the idea then is that when we get into that state of or really develop the trait of believing in this separate self, that we are all separate from one another, what that does is that breeds the inspires the notions, right, that the world is, that they're all out to get me, kind of, right, that I have to protect myself, right, that I have to protect my stuff, that I'm in competition, right, that in order for me to succeed, you have to fail, right? But it doesn't really work that way. Right? That's all just constructs made by people who profit off of that concept, right? Like that's kind of where that goes, right? And so there's a dilemma here, right? How do we, in a large way or in a very sort of powerful way, you could even say to yourself, well, I've grown up thinking that there's a separate self and I don't know any other way to think about it. And so I'm just going to keep going with it, right? Like that's kind of how it might feel to you, right? It might feel like this is just too foreign to me and there's no way for me to get to that place of, I can kind of consider it here and there, but you know what? When I'm driving to work and somebody cuts me off, I go right back to my sense of self. Right? As a separate entity for the rest of the world. And that really, let me back up just a moment, because that really is the key here, right? That it is not the sense of self that we want to get rid of, right? It's the sense of a separate self. In other words, to feel an identity, to feel an ego is fine, right? It's actually very positive in many ways. But to properly see that ego for what it really is to see that ego as interbeing with the rest of the world, right? And this is going to promote, a sense of safety, right? Because remember what I said, right? When we come across someone, anyone, right? The first thing that our mind and our nervous system are trying to determine, and again, this happens way outside your level of consciousness. You have no idea this is going on, right? But every single person you meet, you are looking at specific attributes of this person. You're looking at their facial expressions. You're listening to what they call prosody of the voice. I think it's pronounced prosody. It might be prosody. Basically, that up and down lilt that people's voices have when they're in a safe and harmonious place, right? You're looking at these things and listening for these things to determine, is this person a threat, right? And now the problem is that the more that we conceive of ourselves as a separate entity, the more everybody seems like a threat, right? Because it's just me out here in the world. I'm trying to survive here out all alone here. I got just my friends here to help me. You know, I got to watch out for myself. And so as unconsciously, we're going to start believing that the rest of the world is out to get us in some way, right? Everybody's looking to get one over on us, to steal from us, to knock us down a peg, right? But the reality is that that's not what's happening around us. That's a construct of our mind, right? And of course, you know, this is where we get into the biases of the mind, right? Because if I think this way, right, or if I embody this belief, right, that I am a separate self, and that every interaction is a potential conflict, every interaction is a potential danger, right? If I live that way, right, then what happens is that, like, again, the implicit biases of the mind, specifically right now, I'm talking about the confirmation bias of your mind, right? That means that if you're living in this way of feeling that everybody, you know, I'm separate from everyone else and it's all out to, you know, it's you know, survival of the fittest kind of thing. Well, then when the person does cut you off on the road, you're going to say, you see? They're all out to get me, Art, I told you. But the reality is that person cut you off because they got to go to the bathroom really badly. Or somebody's, you know, their child is waiting to be picked up and there was a mix-up between them and their partner and their child is sitting there alone and afraid. Somebody's in the hospital and they're rushing to get there. Or they're stuck in their own, you know, misery of their sense of separate self, right? And so this is where my buddy, who has no idea that he's my buddy, Richard Davidson talks about. I refer a lot to a talk that he gave a few years ago that talks about the four constituents of well-being, right? That it is part of our well-being to have generosity. Right? And what is generosity? Generosity is feeling that, you know, that your needs are important to me. Does that sound like a connection to you? Because it sounds like a connection to me, right? And so, you know, just a very foundational aspect. Now, the other ones that we talked that Richard Davidson mentioned, I'll just review the four that he talked about. In addition to generosity, there was also outlook, meaning the ability to have an optimistic outlook for a sustained level of time, not to be just thrown off by everybody who cuts you off or everybody who, you know, perceived threats and perceived slights, right? To look at it, to say, no, the universe is a friendly place. It's not a place to be afraid of, right? So generosity, outlook, attention, how clear your mind is, how easily it is for you to pay attention to something, and how quickly you recognize when your attention has wandered, right? And then resilience, right? Resilience is how quickly you recover from an adverse emotional experience. Right. And so all four of these, I mean, generosity is truly the one that's truly, you know, illustrating this connection. But all four of these are sort of intertwined with each other. Right. Because the more that I feel, you know, if I automatically feel a sense of generosity, then that means that I feel a sense of connection. And if I feel a sense of connection, then that is going to inform and motivate my level of resilience, right? Because if I'm connected to everybody, then it's not just me going through this. We're all going through stuff, right? So I can come back a little bit better. Then it's also going to, technically it's going to also help with my attention because I'm going to, be paying attention to my generosity, right? I mean, so that's a little bit of a stretch, right? But certainly the outlook and certainly the resilience. Also, if I feel connected, I'm going to come back down a little bit. So you can see how these things are, even if it's a tenuous connection, you can see the connection, the interbeing of all four of these, right? So now the question becomes, what do we do, right? Like, how? Okay, Art, I buy it, I'm in, I get it, what do I do? Well, the first step in terms of what we're talking about here is to simply practice generosity. And you can practice and cultivate generosity. And here's the thing, the more you practice it, the more it becomes an innate sense or what they call, what psychologists and neuroscientists will call, an automatic emotional response, right? So that when something happens, automatically you come back with a sense of gratitude, a sense of kind, giving of yourself. And of course, what this is doing, right, that when we practice, generosity, which is giving of yourself, right? And so when we practice generosity, right, what we're doing is we're establishing a connection. And so what we're doing then is we're coming outside of this self, right? We're allowing our ego doesn't go away, right? But our ego allows for us to not be enclosed by the ego, but allows us to instead connect to others and bring them into our ego, right? Bring your ego into my ego and my ego into your ego. That's what Dr. Siegel, who I just started this course, he always talks, and this is not new for me, this is years he's been talking about this, that there's a we that happens, right? There's you and your ego and your personality and your, four constituents of well-being, right? All that exists in you and all that exists in me. But as we're interacting with each other, there's a combination of those two things happening between us. And it shapes, like, my whole mind shapes your mind. And your mind and your nervous system shapes my mind and my nervous system. And this is what interbeing is all about, right? Like, we could not exist. If you talk about, something as horrible as solitary confinement, right? Solitary confinement has been shown in prisoners to cause, true pathology in the brain. Right? It is actually something that will kill somebody. I mean, especially if you talk about an infant, right? An infant, a human infant. And I think I mentioned this, the other day. If you have an infant sitting in a crib, right? The temperature is controlled. The humidity levels are controlled. The child is changed regularly. The child is fed all the nutrients that it needs. The child was healthy in birth, right? There was no underlying, condition that would threaten the child's health, right? So in other words, a healthy baby sitting in a comfortable crib in a very safe environment with all its physical or all its nutritional needs taken care of, that child will die if you do not pick it up. And that's just reality. I mean, that child will die if you don't hold it, if you don't give it that sense of attachment and connection. And that's all of us, every single one of us. And so just because when we're children and infants, we needed it that badly, it doesn't mean that we stopped needing that, right? Of course, we're not going to die from it now. You're not going to, expire. There's people who spend 40 years in solitary confinement. So it is possible for the human, the adult mature human organism to survive it, but not unscathed. Absolutely not unscathed. I mean, there are major issues going on there psychologically. And so the point here is, like, we're not talking about, you know, I don't think you're watching this from solitary confinement in prison, right? So, and I don't think you're an infant, right? So the idea is, how can we improve our life through these concepts and through these tricks, not tricks, but techniques, right? So how do you practice generosity? This is fun. It's a beautiful way. It's a beautiful thing to practice. First thing you do is you wake up in the morning, you set an intention. Right. And you might have to remind yourself, you know, I at one point had a note taped to the ceiling, right, above my bed. So when I woke up, that's the first thing I saw every morning. Right. So you set an intention. Do whatever you got to do to remind yourself to set the intention. That's the trick. But once you set the intention, okay, every day. In the morning, say, I am going to be generous, right? Now first, let's talk about what generosity is, right? And what it not necessarily is, right? It doesn't mean just giving people money. It doesn't mean giving everything you have. It doesn't mean only material things, right? You know, generosity could be just listening to someone, but listening with all of your attention. Generosity could be holding the door open for someone, right? Generosity could be, you know, helping somebody reach something on a supermarket shelf, right? Generosity could be, you know, certainly could be giving to somebody's GoFundMe when they're in trouble, right? Generosity could be offering somebody a ride somewhere. Generosity could be, you know, if you know, like I'm about to give a plant away to somebody for free, you know, maybe I'll give them two, right? Like, you know, like generosity is, but that again, that's a material thing. It doesn't have to be material, right? That's the idea. Generosity is really just giving of yourself in whatever way. Right. So like making eye contact with a cashier and a supermarket and connecting and saying with kindness, like, hey, I hope you have a great day and I really appreciate your help here. You know, that is generosity. So in the morning you set an intention to practice generosity. And then what you do is you look for opportunities throughout your day to express your generosity. And in the beginning, you're going to forget, and that's okay, right? You know, maybe you'll remember once in the day, or maybe you won't remember at all, but the next day you set the intention and you do it over and over and over. Where attention goes, energy flows. So the more you bring your attention to this intention of kindness and generosity, the more it's going to happen for you. You just got to be patient and you got to be consistent. Okay, so again, that's where the real trick is, just remembering to set the intention. If you can start to set that intention, I promise you within a couple of weeks, you're going to start being more generous. And then once you do that, we can start on the other ones, right? You can't really practice resilience so much. That's a little bit different, but we can certainly practice attention. We can certainly practice outlook. And so, you know, start with generosity. After a few weeks of getting that one, send me an email. Say you're ready for the next one, all right? And I'll do a podcast about it, all right? And so if you have any questions about this, okay, you can send me an email about whatever, okay? You can also book a call with me, okay? I say this a lot in every episode these days. I've been saying this, but I want everybody to know this. I mean, this is a big deal, dudes. And ladies, I charge $100 or more for my sessions here. And people gladly pay them. I mean, it's not like I'm charging $100 and getting a bunch of complaints. I mean, people are like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. Right? This has changed my life, they tell me. All the time I hear that kind of stuff. And so there's $100 value. Like if I put $100 bill on a desk, would you walk past it? Of course you wouldn't. You'd be like, whoa, let me grab that $100. But the point is that you have something that is worth $100 that's already yours. It's already yours. It's bought and paid for, and it's sitting here just waiting for you to pick it up. How do you pick it up? You simply click the link down below in the description of this video or in the email that you received, okay? It's a Calendly link. You click on it. It puts you into my calendar. You pick a day. You click on the day. It'll show all the available times on that day. You say, okay, yeah, 11 o'clock on Thursday. That's for me. Let's do it. And then we're set, Okay. This Thursday at 11 is not available, but check to see what is available. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this session. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I hope this was helpful. And again, if you have any questions, you want to talk about any of this, I would really welcome to have a 45-minute call with you. All right. All right, everybody. Thanks again. I wish you well. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.